Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar. My name is Serafina Fronja, and I will be your moderator. Our topic today is the 5 paths to Web 2.0 profit. With these strategies, leading organizations have used Web 2.0 interactivity to modify product strategy, offer new services, and surpass the competition. We will examine some of today's companies that are leveraging online collaboration, networking, and user-created content in new and innovative ways. This webinar will also give you real-world tested solutions for enhancing your website and marketing message with Web 2.0. Please feel free to submit questions at any point during the presentation using the dialog window on your webinar toolbar. At the end of the presentation, we will cover as many questions as we can while staying within our promised time allotment of 1 hour. We will follow up individually with those questions we were unfortunately unable to answer during the Q&A at the end of the webinar. Please note if you have colleagues who could not attend this presentation, we are recording it and will send everyone a link after the presentation to the slides and audio recording. The recording will also be made available on Sitecore.net. Please allow me to introduce our presenter today, Darren Guanacha. Darren is a broad technologist with a deep understanding of the web from multiple perspectives. He has been the director of technology for a large financial company. He has run e-commerce operations for a large regional consulting organization. He has also served in senior product marketing positions for web software companies. Darren is VP of product marketing for Sitecore, a leading web content management software company. Darren is blending these multiple perspectives, IT implementer, decision maker, and product expert, in his presentation today. Welcome, Darren.
Thank you, Serafina, and welcome everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Today, we wanted to bring you a relevant topic because we think that in today's marketplace, we're all struggling with how to improve our results. And we felt that today, talking about the 5 paths of Web 2.0 profit was a compelling topic that we're going to take a slightly different twist on. I think it's one of those topics that's been talked about quite a bit. However, I've found in my travels that I'm not very satisfied with how a lot of the industry is talking about this, so we're going to take a little bit of a different approach today, use a lot of real-world examples, and get very tactical and really results-oriented today. But before we dive in, just a quick brief about who Sitecore is and why we are talking to you about some of this today and why we have any credibility in the space at all. First of all, Sitecore is one of the leading enterprise-class .NET web content management vendors out there in the marketplace with offices around the world and with over 1,500 clients and thousands and thousands of deployments and been recognized by a lot of the leading vendors. And why this is important is for you. This is where we get a lot of our knowledge. We talk to customers every day. We talk to customers who are trying to do these types of things. We've implemented these types of solutions over and over again. In fact, everybody I show you today, every screenshot is a Sitecore customer, and I'm going to take you through what they're doing. So as a result, as part of my job and what I do as a product marketing exec, is I'm talking to customers all the time and understanding what their challenges are and what their needs are. And I'm taking a lot of those experiences, a lot of that knowledge, as I'm traveling the industry, as I'm talking to the Gartners and Forresters of the world, I've rolled a lot of that together, as well as even recent industry conferences that I've seen. I'm bringing a lot of that together in this presentation. So that's just a little background on who we are, and just some of the examples I'm going to talk about today. Many of them I'll actually refer to. You know, I've got an example of Glaxo's initiatives and several of these other vendors and companies who are doing this stuff every day today. And some of their experiences and their results. So I'm going to bring a lot of that knowledge to you today and help you understand, I think, where the rubber meets the road with some of this. Now, before I dive right in, I want to just talk a little bit about what I think is the perception problem in Web 2.0 today. I have been to a lot of conferences. I've talked to a lot of analysts, and I've heard this from many, many customers that, you know, this Web 2.0 thing sounds great. You know, this whole community stuff is interesting, but most of the people I talk to tell me, not in my company. And there's always, I've heard about 100 different good reasons why this wouldn't apply to my industry, this wouldn't apply to my company. A lot of us have seen so much of this social networking stuff. We've read things about Twitter, we've read things about Facebook and MySpace and all these things, and immediately our minds wander to, well, why in the world would I want to do that? None of my customers would be doing that. And what I'm going to talk to you today about is that this stuff is absolutely relevant to you, no matter what industry, whether you're in financial services, In fact, I've got a bank who's actually doing a lot of this stuff now. So there is no industry that is immune to this. There is no space that isn't this isn't relevant to. And so that's one of the biggest perception problems, though, is we tend to close our mind off. Now, the fact you're sitting on a webinar today with me tells me that you're open-minded, and it tells me that you're interested in understanding how this might apply to you. I'll try and give you that today. But I think that's one of the biggest perception problems. And it's not completely undeserved, because I think a lot of the business impact of some of this has remained unclear. There's still a lot of zealotry out there in the marketplace about how everything, if you build it, it will come, and just build community because that's the right thing to do. And we're all business people here, and that's not really realistic. We need business results. We need business impact. And that has not been very clear in the marketplace. People are not talking about how do you get direct benefit and what are the tactical ways you can get that benefit. Again, I'm going to try and solve some of that for you today and give you some insights as to what I'm hearing and what I've learned from my customers about how you can get business impact. And you know, hence the title, you know, Get Web 2.0 Profits, because I think it's time to get tactical. It's time to really understand what is the real business value of some of these things. Of course, process integration challenges also hold us back. You know, there's this notion of that, you know, my Web 2.0 content is over here and my website content is over there. And, of course, on top of that is control issues, right? The big bugaboo that everyone worries about is what if that one person says something really mean about us in the public forum? You know, we must control, we must, you know, and the classic marketing mindset that we all have is all about message control and message strategy. And so there's a lot of that perception control issue that we have that we also limits our thinking and holds us back in a lot of this stuff. And, of course, we're in a down economy. So, or in the beginnings of a potential recession, however, whatever your outlook is on this, and one shades of gray, there is a perception of a down economy. And when that happens, you know, your risk for tolerance goes right through the floor. You stay with what you know. And so that's the other good reason why you think that none of this is relevant, or you shouldn't be doing any of this, or maybe some other company is going to do it, but you should. And so to that, to those arguments, I will say that now is the perfect time for Web 2.0. And I'll back it up with what Harvard Publishing said. And they said that in this market, and in any recession-oriented market, the brands, you know, the typical reaction is to go, but you know, pull back, cut spending, remove a lot of the stuff. And this Web 2.0 stuff can be perceived as a little labor-intensive because you have to talk to people, right? You can't just blast out messages anymore. It takes a little bit more engagement. And so naturally you want to back off from that. But what Harvard is saying here is that brands that increase their marketing during recession, when everyone else is cutting back, this is where you can have your maximum impact. This is where you can improve your market share and ROI and even lower your costs, because everyone else is pulling back, which is time for you to put your foot in the gas and push some of these, especially some of these new capabilities around Web 2.0. And if you listen to a lot of these points I'm making today, a lot of them don't really cost a lot of money. They can be done fairly inexpensively, and you can really push forward it, and I think, you know, expand your advantage, gain market share, and really push ahead. So, again, I'm going to be very focused on tactical results and tactical things that we can do, because I think too much of this has been theory craft, and what we really need to do is talk about the brass tacks of it all. So here are the five paths we're going to talk about. The whole notion of building trust and community, and really, why does that matter? I'm going to get into why that matters and what it does for your business. I'm going to talk about how you can use your community to enhance innovation. I think the notion of crowdsourcing community collaboration to help you build better products and services. We are selling something at the end of the day. We're all trying to grow a business that involves selling something to somebody. And so how do we use our own customers as a way to innovate? We'll talk about the fueling of word-of-mouth marketing, and in general, marketing as a discipline under the Web 2.0. You know, I've often also heard it called PR 2.0, and the ways that you can use a lot of the new social technologies to drive your marketing. Some of this is a little bit old, some of this is a little bit new, and some of just blending them to you in a really good way. And then lastly, gaining better customer understanding, which ultimately helps in terms of understanding how better to sell to them, how better to engage them, how better to work with them. And then finally, improving customer service and satisfaction. This is probably the oldest of all of these. This is probably the thing that you have the most experience with, is that the notion of customer self-service, customers helping customer, going to talk a little bit about that and how you can also take that game to the next level and use some of this additional technologies to drive better customer service. Because we, again, know that it's far easier and far cheaper to keep an existing customer than to add a new one. Okay, so let's start with the first path. Why trust? Why do you need to build trust? And it seems like a silly question, but I think it bears answering specifically around a lot of these social technologies. First point I'll make is this. You can't dictate your brand anymore. It used to be that you had a big marketing spend around brand impressions and brand management, and we have seen now in the last 3 years, 4 years, that that can be destroyed overnight by an angry customer who gets vocal. And now our ability to influence lots and lots of people has grown to the point where we really can't dictate our brand anymore because it can easily be ripped away from us in a heartbeat. And just look at some of the things that are happening to Comcast in the marketplace and their perception problems, and no matter how much advertising they spend, or look at Microsoft and their perception problems around Vista. It is impossible to dictate brand anymore, or very, very hard and very, very expensive. So instead of trying to broadcast our brand, instead of trying to bang on the drum and message our brand, what we should be doing is become influencers. We should become influencers to the brand. We should be in the marketplace, in the communities, influencing their thinking about brand and becoming that trusted source. And by building credibility and trustworthiness in that marketplace, we now have the ability to influence what people think about our brand and how they talk about our brand. And in fact, we also can turn our customer base into brand defenders and brand champions. Now, this probably sounds like a little bit of work. It's really not that much work. When you think about what you're doing today with PR, and in fact, we probably have a PR agency, don't get rid of your PR agency. Put your PR agency to work for you. They can be helping you do this as well. The ability for you to take that trust and that commitment, and what you're doing is you're being honest. I'll talk about how we actually do this in a minute. But the ability for you to build that trust and commitment and to create that community, your customers will tolerate an amazing amount if they believe in you, if they believe you care. Customers quit because they think you don't care. This is a chance to make them feel you do care. So having a community on your site, using your site, and it doesn't matter what business you're in, you can use community. You don't have to be a high-tech firm. You don't have to be Facebook. You can be anybody and use community. They can be customer extranets. They can be public-facing sites with web boards, publicly accessible web boards, as little as you like. Creating a community that allows you to have brand champions and brand defenders and use those in the marketplace on your site as well as off your site. Now, I'm not just suggesting you do these on your own websites because that's really where Sitecore lives as a web content management vendor. I'm talking about getting out in the marketplace too. If you look at, I mentioned Comcast. Well, Comcast launched an initiative recently, Comcast Cares. They did it on several different social networking sites. And there's been a lot of media. I'd suggest you Google what they've done. They've had such a tremendous amount of negative press and backlash from the community that they launched a counter-initiative, and it's working. It is slowly starting to turn the tide because they become trusted sources, and then they start to influence back to protect that brand and to protect that. Now, the other thing that trust does is it overcomes fear of risk at the end of any purchase cycle. Now, it doesn't matter what you've ever bought in your life. Think about the last car you bought. At the end of the purchase cycle, when you're just about ready to sign, that the dotted line, the 5,500 forms you have to sign when you buy a house or you buy a car, what went through your mind? Fear. Fear went through your mind. The risk of that purchase, was it the right thing? Is it going to work? Is it going to last you a long time? Is it going to be affordable? All those fears, all those risks come to your mind right at the end of any sales process, any sales cycle. It's the psychology of selling. Trust overcomes that. Even early on in a relationship with a vendor, you still have fear. You still have risk. Again, trust overcomes. That is why people do business with people. In fact, Don Rogers, I was at a recent conference, and Don Rogers from the Rogers Peppers Group, these are the guys that originally wrote one of the first personalization books, One-to-One Marketing, back in the day. He talked about Stephen Covey's new book, The Speed of Trust. And the book's an excellent read. If you haven't read it, it's definitely something you should go on your reading list. Speed of Trust talks about the idea that trust is probably the most important thing in business, and how do you build trust? Well, again, I've talked about this notion of community, and social technology is a cornerstone to building trust, right? Because you can use these communities to foster this trust. Lack of trust, of course, slows transactions down and imposes frictional costs. So that's true. One of the greatest examples is eBay. And if you think about what made eBay so successful, In the beginning, it was all about the fact that they created a hardwired mechanism for you to trust somebody. The fact that they had many thousands of positive rankings, reputation, if you want to call it that, gave you the confidence, gave you the trust to do business with them. Now, nowadays, eBay is not doing as well as they had in the past. In fact, in a lot of ways, Amazon has surpassed them, is doing some of the things that eBay probably should have. What has Amazon done? The same thing. They have created a trusted source. They've done it differently, right? Instead of creating the seller-to-seller marketplace, they created the classic, you know, web-oriented shop, and then create a marketplace around that, so that small vendors can also sell in the Amazon marketplace. But what they have done, most importantly in all of that, and where they're starting to win against eBay, is the fact that they're backing up every transaction with trust. They'll refund people's money. They'll give you your money back. They'll take a loss just to build trust. Because if you build trust, and if you use your community to build trust, it is such a powerful mechanism for not only selling in your business, but also, you know, creating that goodwill, creating those brand advocates and those brand champions. Now, of course, the negative is also true, that, you know, our reputation precedes us electronically now. It is absolutely true. The Comcast example is a great data point. You disappoint a customer, and thousands will soon learn of it. You know, Yankelovich did a customer survey. They're a marketing research firm that asked the question, what would you do if a business violated your trust? And violating trust means many things to many people. But 76% said that they would tell their friends and associates, and then 12% would write about it. This number, that's the important number in blue, is going to go up, because as we become more empowered on the online world, as we have more mechanisms for expressing ourselves online, this number is only going to go up. So this just tells us that we have got to proactively manage our reputation. We have to proactively manage our relationship with our customer. And make sure that we have multiple layers of brand defenders, multiple layers of brand champions, and we're effectively understanding what's being said about us. So trust is crucial. And if another good reading suggestion here is Don Rogers and Martha Martha Rogers' book Rules to Break and Laws to Follow is also an excellent read in the space. I think it's another cornerstone for what you should really be thinking about today. So, all right, that's fine. That's the why you should. Now, how do you do it? First of all, create a place where you can meet your customers online and engage. I suggest you do this on your website. I also suggest you go off your website. You do both. You can't just do one. You need to go out where customers are. You have to find the place your customers live. If they're on Facebook, go to Facebook. If they're on Twitter, go to Twitter. If there are marketplaces and portals and forums where they're living, go there. Spend some time, put your PR agencies to work, get out there and talk to them. And then also give them a forum, give them a place to do it on your site. Create a platform for them to interact with you. Believe me, they want to come to you. You are the authority. You are the source. They would love to. Now, if you're not giving them that their environment, they're going to go create a Google group. They're going to go create a Yahoo group. They're going to go somewhere and they're going to talk. If you don't give them the platform to do it, they'll do it somewhere else. Do it where they do it, where you can see it, where you can control it. Better they do it at your place than someplace else. You want to know what's going on. You want to monitor everything. Get some tools in-house that can do this. There are lots of free ones. If nothing else, you should have an array of Google keywords that are telling you everything that's being said about you. Even better than that are tools like FriendFeed. There's a whole host of social technologies that will tell you everything that's been said about you. And then, of course, there are lots of package applications out there that you can also engage that will help you monitor everything that's been said. Your PR agency can help you here again. They probably have those tools already. If you don't have a PR agency, get those tools yourself. Start monitoring. Get ahead of the curve. Don't let it come to you. You need to go to it. And be honest. Transparency goes an amazing far way. Even the negative experiences. I talked about this, the fear of somebody saying something badly. Let it happen. Let it happen. Let your brand defenders come in and help you. Be honest and talk about how to solve the problem, because people will respect you greatly. Now, this terrifies companies because, you know, this notion of transparency is a cultural shift. I would agree you need to think about some, making some of those cultural shifts. I was trained my own personal self as a PR guy early on, and one of the things you talk about is message, and stay on message. Some, you know, I think in the new world, Web 2.0, we can't dictate our message anymore. You have to get out there. You have to get transparent. You have to talk about what these things are. Again, do it on your own site where you have the best brand defenders and you have the most community support, because that's the best place to do it. But get out there and talk to them and build tools and materials for your brand defender. I think I was reading a review, an article about one of the guys that runs a Disney blog. And he talked about one of the things that Disney can do for him the best is create materials and tools for him as a brand defender, because he is a staunch advocate. But they do very little for him. They really take care of the classic media publishing folks, but they don't do anything for him. Create materials and tools for your brand defenders. Think about ways where you can help them make the case, even if it's a simple set of PowerPoint slides and imagery that they can use in their own blogs and their own materials. Create a way for them to get that message out for you. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. So how else can you leverage community other than trust, right? So trust is a biggie. Creating that trust, creating that natural alignment between you and your customers is powerful. But what about just the community in general? Well, communities naturally generate fans. It's a human dynamic. We love things. So here's a couple places you can also just tap into the general community. Harness that excitement and enthusiasm and spread it to others. Let them talk about you. Encourage them to tell their stories and put those stories to work. Your most challenging customers, when you're honest and when you help them, become your fiercest advocates. In fact, some of your most challenging critics will turn into your staunchest advocates when they see that you care and you try. Reputation and content rating is a powerful way to create community. People, there's a phenomena that we're seeing where people just love the reputation of being a contributor. There's a tremendous amount of power when asked, how do I get people to contribute? Create reasons for them to contribute. Not only contests and things like that, but just give them a reputation. Give them titles. Give them things, simple things. Let them see that their content is highly rated. That's some of the simplest things that Amazon's doing on their own websites. They're creating cadres of ambassadors who are well-respected, who have great ratings, and they're giving them incremental things. It doesn't have to be monetary. It can simply be reputation. But give them reputation tools. Give them content ratings. Blend community content seamlessly with your web experiences on your sites. Again, pull them into the community. The more you can push community content into your standard marketing sites, the better. Give them reasons to engage in the community. Shorten the bridge that if there is a bridge at all, shorten that bridge, because communities will tell you what is most important to them. You can learn so much from those communities, and I'll talk about understanding the customer a little bit more later, but the idea here is that communities actually can tell you what they want. They'll tell you as a marketer what you need to be doing, so they'll give you the best insight of all of how they're consuming your product and what they want. So let's just talk about some examples here, because I think that's probably one of the most valuable things that we can do here today. So first of all, in terms of just telling you what they want, here's a great implicit example of what do people want. So we're looking at the heart site here. These are the guys that make the animal products, the flea collars if you have a dog or a cat. And so here's a simple example of looking at the community behavior and seeing that the most shared documents or the most recommended documents themselves on the community site, and this gives that marketer a chance to understand really what's on the mind of all these people. And you can see that the diagnosis center is a very important thing. So this gives you as a marketer a full understanding of what's going on in the community, but it also gives you the ability to let them feel like they're contributing. And again, they're having impact, and people like to have impact. I think the other thing that Hearts has done brilliantly, and this is really the first step in a many-step process where they're going to really blow out a tremendous amount of capabilities on the site, is this notion of a tip exchange. And again, if you're an animal owner, I recommend you go out to Hearts and you check this site out and you play with this yourself. But the idea behind this is quite good. You can upload either a video, some video tips, or you can upload an image and a textual description of your tip for other pet owners. Now, what are they really doing here? Beyond just creating some cool content, beyond creating some interesting things that are going to engage you as a user, they're creating trust. Because what they're showing you is all these other people who have pets, and they trust their pets with Hearts products. They are establishing trust at the most elemental level, that you feel comfortable in this community. You feel stable in this crowd, and all these people are getting benefit, and you will too. That's trust. They're building trust, and that, from a psychology standpoint, here's a great example of how a very simple way of letting people contribute content and sharing that content creates a wonderful level of trust that will overcome anyone's fear of, is this the right product for me? Is this going to hurt my animal? No, because 55 other people are showing how great their pets are doing using this product. That's better than any case study ever will be, and that's the power of community content. Now, here's an interesting example with GlaxoSmithKline, the My Alley product here. So it's a weight loss product. Now, it's a pharmaceutical product. And it's about losing weight. Now, what's the biggest challenge? It's an emotional subject. So one of the things this site does very well, and there's a tremendous amount of content on the site, but you can communicate with others in the community, but they've also brought forward this notion of community circle. And this is where I'm talking about surfacing content from the community and bringing it into your website. On the top of the screen here, you see all these little floating bubbles. These are people. These are real people and real stories about real people. And you can see and you can drill into their stories. But on top of that is blended right into that is the top discussions and the top events and things being said by people, either blogs or forum posts. There's a tag cloud here showing the hottest, most interesting piece of content. Again, what they're doing here is they're saying these people are being successful, or these people have done all these great things. In fact, if you mouse over this, go out and just type myalley.com, and if you mouse over any of these areas, you'll see how many pounds they've lost. So again, you're seeing people showing success. You're seeing real-world people, people you could trust, because they have no benefit here other than the fact that they're talking about this. And some of them are struggling. Some of them are plateauing. They're not losing as much weight as they want. The community is supporting them. And so again, I'm feeling like I can be successful here. They're building trust. And they're using their community to build trust in the minds of the next person who's thinking about using this product. Another good point here is just, again, in the blending of content here, the Nest site is a part of a series of sites. It's the Nest and the Knot. So when you get married, you go to the Knot to do all your wedding planning. Then once you're married, you go to the Nest. And the Nest, you learn about, where to live, decorate, how to decorate your house, all those good things. And then, of course, then the next step, of course, is the bump. The bump is the baby site where now you're pregnant. So the Nest is that middle site. And all the sites actually do the same kinds of style in terms of blending of content with more social content here. But you can see here in the middle of this page, the community section here, again, harvesting out some of the top articles, top discussions, top blogs, and embedding it and insinuating all that content throughout the entire Nest. They're constantly trying to draw you into the community and trying to show you these are all the people being very successful in this environment, trying to draw you into engaging in the community. This is a media site where it's almost a magazine style media site, but they're selling advertising, they're selling selling product on the site, and again trying to get you to feel comfortable and successful in this market and using blended content and weaving that very tightly with all their other more traditional content. Okay. So that's trust and community. I think community and trust is a very important factor in a lot of the social computing. And probably if I had to put a weight on any one of them, I think that's probably one of the most important things they can do for us as a for your business. But there's a couple other things to think about. And the next point I'll make is how do you use community and social technology in general to enhance innovation of your products or your services or whatever it is you do in your business? And I would say that the first point is that our current customers, are some of the best sources for product enhancements and service enhancements. These people are using our products and they know what they want in the products. I think the other thing that I've learned in my travels is that groups of people make better collective decisions than even a product expert or an individual expert does. And there's a couple of sociological reasons for this. The fact is that as long as a group includes a diverse set of people making independent decisions, and those decisions don't predicate on experts in the group. In fact, it's more important to have just more diversity of perspectives that count. So if you look at your customer base, they come from many industries, they come from many perspectives. As an aggregate, those people will make a better decision and help you drive to a better solution. Now, the number one objection I get from people when I bring this up is, well, that's great, but customers are looking at what they're doing right now, and they're not necessarily focused on the next thing, or they're not necessarily watching the market. That's not true. Because if you take a broad enough sector of your customers and a broad enough level of your customers, there is always somebody in that organization who's looking upward and outward to the next thing that they need to do, of looking at the strategy. It's just a matter of having the broad enough perspective. So if you engage that community well, you can create what they call, one of the things, you can emulate a decision market. And what decision markets are very good at is predicting things like sporting events. The election results, far better, greater accuracy. I think one of the examples I saw at a recent conference was the fact, I think this was, Don Peppers had also come up with this, the notion that the Florida Growers Association of Oranges can out-predict the weather forecasters almost every time. And in fact, the stock market is often, when there's an industrial incident or industrial accident, like when the space shuttle blew up, the stock market out-predicted what vendor had the faulty part long before the investigation turned up the information. The notion is that collective decision-making, collective independent people come to decisions much, much faster, and our customer bases are no different than that. So we can enhance our customers. So what do I mean? What do you do here? Well, you bring them in. You ask them what they're trying to do. You bring up parts of your forum, or parts of your website, and you let them engage with you and talk about what they're trying to do, and let them comment on each other's suggestions, and let that decision-making process happen in a far more organic sense. This is a good slide that I got from Forrester a couple of years back, and I think it talks about the differences between traditional innovation and customer-driven innovation. So in the left-hand column, traditional innovation is where guys like me, executives in an organization, a product marketer, will sit down and they'll say, okay, what do we got? What are our products and what's the positioning and where do we want to go? And they'll take a very structured approach. They may ask you a couple questions, but basically I'm asking the questions to the answers I want to know. Very linear, very structured, and then you push that stuff out to the customer. They consume it or they don't, and maybe you'll use a couple surveys, but generally it's very, very structured. The customer-driven approach is very different, right? Customers are thinking about what they need. Customers are thinking about their problems in a way that you've never thought about because you don't understand their business as well as they do, of course. It's far more spontaneous. It's a little chaotic, but the point is that it's a very evolutionary approach. You're also creating a tremendous amount of goodwill, and the problems you're solving are latent problems. So they're not the explicit ones that you see on the surface, but really some of the deep-seated, highly valuable problems that they've got. And again, you can use tools like blogs and forums and other collaborative environments to allow them to talk about the problem, massage it. And what I have seen in my travels is that product, groups of consumers, groups of customers can create stunning results on what they want. There's a tremendous amount of research that's been done about how groups of people can do. In fact, many companies are now using decision markets in their own companies, just letting their employees contribute. One of the case studies I read recently was a company that had given everybody a bunch of money, in terms of decision dollars. Right? Let's say we all get $100, and we get to apply those $100 into a bunch of ideas. And so as R&D is coming up with all these feature ideas, the company's voting on them with their dollars and investing those in those dollars. And by seeing the investment trends and by seeing how people are voting and by pushing those products that are getting most highly voted, those are turning out to be some of the hottest commodities and hottest products that are actually driving innovation for many companies that want to take this approach. My point is you take that out to your customers. You take that concept out to your customers and let your customers come in and help participate in that as well, because that drives tremendous amounts of innovation for you. Probably the most appropriate example of this is the Voices for Innovation site. The Voices for Innovation is one of the Sitecore customers. It's a joint effort with Microsoft. And what it really is it's a collaborative environment where a lot of IT decision policy gets vented and vetted out here. So the idea of the site is that you come in, and if you're in the technology field, you sit down and you collaborate with your peers. And you network with them and discuss, what political policies need to be, what legal policies need to happen, how to discuss them, impact of different policies being discussed in, different legislative bodies. And what I really like about this site is it lets you network and network heavily and then manage who is, who's in your friend network, who is collaborating with you. You can, tracks all your discussion forums, tracks all of your commentary, tracks your favorite authors, your favorite leaders, and lets you iteratively collaborate and creates a network for you to manage all the people that are your peers that are working on similar ideas for you, and allows you to create some policy decisions, come up with ideas, and really work through the process of understanding technological impact in terms of legislation. And it's a wonderful site. If you haven't, you should take a look at it. Again, voicesforinnovation.com is a very, very powerful site for allowing collaboration and allowing people to engage and innovate. And again, here's some of the more tactical view of what they've done on their forums and things like that. But the ability for people to create these very deep dialogues and iterate. And, of course, they're also blending in traditional content here and pulling content from many different sources. And you can see a tag cloud here on the right-hand side. The power behind this is pretty compelling. They're able now to deliver a tremendous amount of insight and knowledge based on the group of knowledge base and how they're interacting. And they've come up with solutions where no one else could because of the hybridized environment, this hive-type environment where they're really working together and collaborating. You know, another good example here, this is a shot from BeliefNet. And Belief.net is a religious-oriented site. And what I like about what they've done here is that they take a lot of community service content and then they surface that back out to the rest of the community. So you can see here that we're tracking what's the most popular pieces of content that's being contributed, the most emailed, and this is giving the people who run this site a tremendous amount of knowledge and insight about where their service, in this case it's a website, and the people with religious affiliations who want to come together. This is a great way for them to collaborate and understand, but it also gives BeliefNet a tremendous amount of understanding about what they need to be doing and the services they need to be providing. And this is a way that they're able to really stay in touch with what people want on their site. Okay. So now let's talk about something a little more brass tacks, and that is, you know, marketing, word-of-mouth marketing particularly. So we've built some trust. We've got some community going. We've done some of that legwork. Let's talk about PR 2.0. Now, I mentioned before, you got to get out ahead of this stuff. You can't just let this stuff come to you. You cannot be, let's say, you know, one of the famous examples is, you know, one of the baby companies who had a product that was known to cause rashes on kids. Concerned parent goes out, blogs about it, tells some forums about it. All of a sudden, 100,000 people know about this thing. And then you wake up in the morning, and it's knocking on your door, and you're dealing with it after the fact. That's not where you want to be. Where you want to be is ahead of this thing. You want to know where it's coming. And better yet, if you can get out ahead of this and even start to offer expertise and advice, again, be open, be honest, be transparent, talk about the solution, and work with the community. That is a very powerful way to, from a PR standpoint. But not only that, but that actually gets you findability. We'll talk about findability in a minute. You also need to generate content that the community wants. You're going to listen to your community. They're going to talk about the kinds of things they want. Likely the stuff that the community wants is what everybody else wants. It makes you findable. And as you're creating content, as you're creating materials, and content can be many things. It can be video. It could be articles, it could be documents, it could be just simple press releases even. As that content gets created, syndicated everywhere, go out and find places where people want this content and put it out there. Make it easy to consume, make it easy to get, and make it also easy for your community to syndicate it. Syndicate it everywhere. And proactively generate goodwill moments. What I mean by this is it sort of goes back a little bit to the trust card, right? The idea that when you're building trust, you're creating these moments of goodwill. I think about this as a bank, as a goodwill bank, and as we as customers to any organization we do business with, there's moments when they just do the very best thing that they could have done, and I feel very good about them. That's a goodwill moment. Create those goodwill moments proactively. Find ways to whatever your business is, and everyone's business is different. When it's a bank and they remember some important detail about me, or they offer me something that was highly relevant at the time, it's a goodwill moment. When I'm on an airplane and one of the flight attendants recognizes that I'm a elite whatever, that makes me feel very good. That's a goodwill moment. Make it easy for your community to tell those stories. Make it easy for them to transmit the goodness, because we're all too quick to talk about the negative experience. Make it easy for them to tell the good stories. Make it easy for them to broadcast that stuff out, and then generate content that makes you findable. Findability, i.e. Google, and whatever your search engine your search engine du jour is, make yourself findable. Now, what impacts findability? Well, we all know about SEO. We've all probably read 20 books and spent a lot of time thinking about how we can do on-site SEO and make sure we have keyword densities. And content management's, I think, got that handled. We know how to do some of that stuff. Some of this content came from that show that I was at recently, New Marketing Summit. Todd Dufferin from PR Squared put some very nice slides on marketing in a down economy. But one of the things he talked about was the idea of findability, right? Syndication. Now, getting your content out, even simple as creating RSS feeds on your site and making sure those RSS feeds can be easily syndicatable. Making sure you're putting out blogs, not only your own site blogs, but encourage people to do it off-site. In fact, Sitecore has a tremendous community of bloggers around our own technology. Now, that's partly due to the fact that we've got a technology that a certain class of developers really like. They talk about it all the time. If you do a search on Google and you go look at blogs, you're going to see a whole bunch of these pop up and people talking about the technology and what it does. But generating even content, generating meaningful content that's useful to the community itself becomes content. It becomes a content magnet. So people are posting articles and posting blogs about their success, posting challenges that they've had that you helped them overcome, talking about putting up videos on YouTube even and linking them back to your site, putting up photos on Flickr. Any of those things create a tremendous amount of findability because at the end of the day, Google loves social media. Google loves all that content. So even if your prospects, if you're not using Twitter, if you think MySpace is just for those college kids, it doesn't really matter. Because even if your customers aren't there, even if they don't tweet, they don't Flick, they don't Tube, it doesn't matter. Because Google loves that stuff. Put it out there anyway. Now, the odds are you may reach a market segment you didn't think you had or didn't think they would care about you. Even if there's not one customer out there, put it up there anyway. Find ways to syndicate all your content. Put it out there. Create a group out there on Flickr and put up some content. Put up some images. Create a Twitter account and start Twittering. Do all those things because, again, Google loves social media. Google loves connections. Google's engineered and designed to answer questions, and they think that the more you're connected, the more you're answering questions. So spend that time, even if you don't think your prospects are out there, do it anyway because it improves your findability. And let your customers talk back to you, right? Let them communicate back to you what is meaningful to them. Now, here's a simple example of a page rating. This is by LearnToGrow.com. LearnToGrow is on every single page. They understand what is relevant and what is not relevant for customers, and they prioritize the way they deliver content back to their community based on the ratings. So they'll focus in on areas that have very good support, or they may rewrite things to adjust them. So they do a very good job of using simple tools like page ratings to understand exactly what is of high relevance and what the community wants, and they use this to create increasing findability. Back to hearts. I think one of the things that Hearts has done very, very cleverly is they've made it very simple. When you go to hearts.com, you click on the share button in the top right. It expands out, makes it very simple for you to associate this content out to Facebook, to Dig, and to Delicious. And they're adding more to this, I'm sure. But even this simple thing to allow that site visitor to syndicate this content. And for those of you who've never played with Delicious is the best search engine that nobody ever uses. Delicious is a wonderful tag-based social linking site that lets everybody tag content and then find content. It's a wonderful tool that I don't think enough people know and can use. But same thing with Dig. Dig allows everyone to tag things and to communicate, what things are connected to what, and lets you say this is great or not great. Again, Google loves links. These are all good connection points. Even if your customers aren't on Facebook, put these kind of tools into your site. Put these kind of tools, make it easy for people to syndicate your content because the more connections, the better. This is what we call off-site SEO. Off-site SEO is tremendously important. If your on-page SEO is about 25% importance, off-site, off-page SEO is 75% important. Okay, now let's talk about customer understanding. Communities will, and I mentioned this earlier, will tell you far more than your web analytics can. Your web analytics will tell you where they went. They'll tell you what they were trying to do, but your community will tell you what they wanted to find. They'll tell you where you missed, which is far more important than what they actually did. I think that's one of the things that is most important. Create environments where they can tell you what they were trying to do, where they're struggling. Let them vent. Let them tell you where their website failed them. Let them tell you. Create avenues for them to communicate. Because if you let them communicate, you know, get frustrated, communicate early, and don't let that frustration build, you're going to be far money ahead because they won't build to the tipping point, and you'll also learn a great deal about what they're trying to do. Gain customer insights on how they're interacting with the community. One of the biggest, most underutilized parts, I think, of the Web 2.0 world is the fact that these people are telling us so much about themselves, and we're not harnessing it. They're blogging, they're answering polls, they're typing in comments, they're connecting to people in groups. And all those things could give us knowledge about who they are and what they want, what's important to them. From a profiling standpoint, you know, this stuff should all be going in the CRM. This stuff should all be going into our Salesforce.com or our Microsoft CRM or whatever you use and telling us about who these people are. This gives us a tremendous amount of ability to do some of these things, and we're not taking advantage of it because we can learn so much from our customers if we just listen. And then customers create a tremendous amount of value for you when you create the most amount of value for them. And what I mean by this is that referrals. If you're in a business where you're using references and referrals, when we're creating the high degree of value for them, is when they'll start answering that back. Now, what I mean by that is we typically think of the world as customer lifetime value. But what more and more companies are starting to do is think about customer reference value, because customer reference value is how they're adding back to our business. So in the beginning of any customer relationship, you know, their lifetime value to us is the highest, right? So if you look at the chart here, again, this is from the Don Rogers talk a couple weeks ago. He talks about this notion that the front side of any customer relationship is you get a lot of lifetime value because, of course, at the beginning you've got all the money, and then it starts to trail down. And of course, maybe there's some maintenance or some ongoing trailer to it, but what we find is that over a period of time, they're as they go live, let's say they use a technology or they're acquiring a service, as they start to use that service, and now the relationship is built, the trust is built. Now that they're starting to get value back from us, that's when their value is returned back to us in terms of references and helping us co-sell, helping us add in more value. So again, this is back from the Harvard Business Review, and this ties into the notion of word of mouth and when they're talking about things. You know, the average customer now has the ability to reach, you know, where they used to be able to talk to, you know, a small networking of people, you know, 5-10 people, and a negative experience or a positive experience would only go that far. Now we have the ability to communicate in a faster, far wider audience. Now we can reach thousands or hundreds of thousands of people if we really, really want to. And the idea behind this is that you want to drive value with your customer, and you want to use tools like social technology to drive more value and allow them to tell that story in a very wide way. And if they're going to tell a negative story, they're going to tell it anyway. It's not whether you give them the tools or not, it doesn't matter. You have to give them the ability to tell that story and manage that story. I notice I'm running out of time, so I'm going to bust through the rest of these slides. Another good case in point, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. They're allowing people to rate products and tell the story. Again, this is a great chance for a marketer to understand what people are wanting, what are the adjectives these people are using about their site, because this talks specifically how people are buying, is how they're talking about the products. You know, we always have our fancy buzzwords for our own products, but what are the customers saying, and what can we learn from our customers? And then lastly, improving customer service. Customers can oftentimes solve problems for each other. This has been known for a long time. When you can engage in the community, when you build that trust in that community and you are showing that you are caring, customers' willingness to help each other goes up. The story that I had heard was that the Comcast Cares guy, who had been very deeply involved in the community and had really built up a lot of credibility and trust, he had a family emergency at one point. When he had to disengage from the community, he let everybody know, I can't be here today, I disengage. The entire community took care of itself for as long as he needed, because he built up such rapport and trust that they had fully at that point, and this is a site that was all about Comcast bashing, and him trying to help people who were frustrated with Comcast. And these are the very people, these staunch critics became the staunchest of advocates. They became those brand defenders because he helped and he showed that Comcast cared. And companies, brands don't generally foster loyalty. It's very hard to be loyal to an inanimate object. What you can be loyal to is people, and people generate a tremendous amount of loyalty. So again, to that example, you can use people to fixate on. And don't be afraid to get visible. Don't be afraid to appoint personnel in the organization. Give them some media training if you need to. Talk about what's inbounds and out of bounds. But empower them to work and act in the community, because this is a different mindset of how you need to do this. But if you do this and build goodwill and build in your community, you're going to get tremendous amounts of results. And ensure that people who have those good experiences and the bad ones, let them, you know, make sure that you have good technology on your site that let people learn from the lessons of the past. Make it simple to find those. Harvest up the best ones. Produce those and put those in for people who are coming in that are new to the community, and let them see how people have been taken care of in the past. And I think probably the last good example I've got here is the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta Falcons, those poor guys have gone through some rough couple of years. Whether you love them or hate them, you have to realize that they've gone through a couple of brutal seasons with some real unfortunate events. And I think one of the things that has held that community together and held that team and the fan base together is the Falcon Life community. And they have done an excellent job of using ambassadors and using the community to really keep the spirits up in the community, make sure that people are still fans, make sure that they're feeling that even though it's a bit frustrating that they're part of that community and that this community has really kept them alive. And I think that this is a great example of how even in the toughest of times, a community can really help you weather through storms. So in summary, those are the five paths that we believe that can lead to web profits. I think building the trusted community, as I've said, I think that's one of the most important. Enhancing innovation is crucial, especially when you have down economies where we need to start out innovating and creating more value to our customers. Leveraging the power of word-of-mouth marketing and really PR 2.0 to make sure that we're managing our reputations and we're managing our positioning in the marketplace, because, again, we can't dictate anymore. We have to influence. Gaining customer understanding to, again, understand what our customers want, how they want to be talked to, and what they're looking for. And, again, and lastly, improving customer service and satisfaction and making sure that we're giving our customers the tools to help each other. So with that, Serafina, why don't we open it up for questions?
Thank you, Darren. We have some great questions today, and I encourage everyone to continue to submit them throughout this Q&A session. The first question we have here is, I'm worried about dealing with inappropriate content. What are my options?
That's a good question. There's a debate that happens on almost every one of these projects where you say, well, we should moderate. We should have heavily moderated everything, and we want everything to go through workflow, and we need to make sure that no one says a bad word. And then invariably the counter-argument comes up, well, if you do that, you'll kill the community. Because if everyone posts something and it waits for 3 days to have it surface, it's not genuine anymore, and now people aren't going to be willing to talk about, you know, or be willing to engage in that community. And it is a balance. I admit that fully. You need to think about the balance. I think that a lot of this is just that control fear card. Of course, you know, put language filters on there. Make sure people aren't using, you know, swear words. If you pick up a post that's got an offensive word in there, route that through some workflow. But I think moderation after the fact is probably better. If you want to have a layered approach, you know, have, you know, maybe community ambassadors in place who can moderate things. But moderation after the fact is probably better, with the exception of maybe having a set of pre-filters that allow you to pick up for swear words or pick up for things that indicate probably a highly offensive post, and then empower people in the community to self-police, self-moderate. That is one of the most powerful parts of that, and that creates a genuine community. If you are doing too much moderation, you can stifle a community. So you need to be careful about that. Again, pick your markets well. I think if you're in, you know, pharmaceuticals, or if you're in financial services, you might need a little more rigorousness. You may need to route things through some sort of a workflow. And you can certainly do that. I think in the case of Hearts, what they're doing is for the video content and the audio content, or the image textual content, they're actually pushing that through a Sitecore workflow and approving that and letting it publish back out. But they're doing that very quickly. They've got people who are on deck to look at those things and very quickly give them the once over and push them out. So the time lag is very, very short. People can get very close to instant gratification, which I think is very important. If you're going to do that, you have to respond quickly to those pieces of content.
Thank you, Darren. The next question here is, what you've presented sounds great, but sounds like a lot of work to do. How can all this be done without a huge staff?
I think that PR firms can help you a lot. I think that there is a tremendous amount of of that you can do just with your PR agency, and maybe giving them a couple extra hours to deal with some of this stuff. Some PR firms specialize this. In fact, I think there's some very, very good ones now emerging that just focus on social media. I mentioned the PR Squared guy. There's a whole host of different PR firms that have dialed into the space. But even beyond that, there are some very good tools that are free that can let you monitor a lot of the stuff automatically, and understand from a PR standpoint what's being said about you, and lets you proactively get in there and talk a little bit about it. It's not a lot of time. Most of it's monitoring and then getting in there and occasionally having a conversation. And I think spread the wealth. You know, get a group of your people that you trust in your organization, maybe even outside of marketing. Let product marketing guys, let some of the developers that you feel can talk cogently in that marketplace have dialogue. You know, set some blogs up to let people talk about things. You gotta lighten up the control a little bit, because again, you're an influencer now. You can't dictate brand. So now you have to influence, and the more the better. So I think broadening out some of this stuff and have tools in place that allow a lot of people to have, you know, additional control. It used to be that, you know, the website was tightly controlled by a handful of people. I think now modern tools are far better, where anyone can do this. Open it up to more of the organization. Bring more of that organization. Give them some media training. Give them some social technology training. Help them understand what you can and can't say and what the message is, and help them reinforce that and empower them to talk to customers and solve problems. I think if you do those things, you can spread the wealth out a bit and not have to have a huge staff. I think that's the important thing, that, you know, many hands make light work. You can broaden the stuff out, and the technology is all there to do that. In all the cases that I talked about today, none of them have huge staffs. They're all fairly small organizations or medium-sized organizations, and the teams behind them are not very big at all.
Thank you, Darren. I think we have time for just a couple more today. Some of the sites in your examples showed user-contributed content mixed in with site content. How is that done?
You know, one of the things that I've seen in modern technology, Sitecore certainly does this, and I think more and more WCMs are doing this as well, is allowing you to orchestrate content together and publish content and pull in a lot of those social controls to marry them onto the page together. Of course, your user-generated content is getting delivered to you in the production environment. And in web content management, you generally have a staging server that's publishing content out to that production server. So there's this mixed world we're dealing with. And what's happening more and more now is that the WCM technologies, and this is where Sitecore has gone, is allowing you to blend those two worlds so that you can be a contributor and be seeing in your authoring environment all the content from the user-contributed content world, but then also writing your content and being able to repurpose and reuse that content, because that's some of the best places you can do that, where you can start to tap into and harvest some of the best content being written out by your user-generated folks. Your community is generating this amazing content. Tap into it, leverage it, repurpose it even, you know, have quotes. The more you can pull that stuff forward and engage more people in your community, that's a great way to grow that community and allow them to see what's going on in the community and get them interested in joining the community.
Thank you, Darren. I think we have time for just one last question here. We're in the financial services industry, but our clients are credit unions, so we are business to business. Do you have specific modifications we should take into consideration to implement these strategies on our site?
So financial services is probably one of the two markets that is heavily regulated. You need to be careful about what people are saying to each other. I will say that one of our customers in Europe is just about ready to launch their site, which has a tremendous amount of user-contributed content. And as soon as they go live, I'd be happy to send you who they are and what they've done. But the idea behind what you need to be able to do is probably have a little more moderation and lots of disclaimers around advice. Specifically, and it depends, if it's credit unions, it's probably less of an issue. As you get closer to advisory services and you start suggesting stocks, then you have to have a little more caution around some of that. So there's some regulatory that you just need to think about. But you can certainly do all those same things. Have moderation in place. Again, you can do after the fact moderation if you like, and just stay on top of that content. Make sure it's on point. If people are making recommendations to each other, you just need to make sure that you are coming in after the fact and saying, of course, these are opinions. You know, you should be talking to a licensed broker. All those kinds of financial services types of things you need to do, but all these same things apply. And creating. And particularly in financial services, all these people are worried about their money right now. So here's a great chance for you as a financial services company to help them feel comfortable about that, why their investments are safe, give them honest answers, help them understand why it would be a mistake to sell right now, and help them understand the longer view. Again, start to take some of the load off of all of your CSRs who are probably answering that question 55 times a day. Put some of those guys in charge of actually answering some of that out in the community, because all these people need to know is that they're safe, things are okay, and they need to hear that from you in a consistent way. So if you can do that, you could benefit greatly from this.
Thank you, Darren, and thank you all. This concludes our webinar. I want to remind everyone that we will be sending you a link to the presentation so you can pass it along to colleagues who may find it of interest. If you asked a question we could not get to during the time allotment, rest assured that you will receive a response shortly. Darren, many thanks for this informative and useful session.
Thank you, Serafina, and everyone have a great day.